Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition of John Solomon Reports. Yes, the Tuesday before Christmas edition of John Solomon Reports. I guess we could say it's the first Tuesday before Christmas edition we've ever had because, well, it's our first year, of course. Well, today we are going to drill down on cybersecurity, something we've been talking about, election integrity, something we've been talking about, and the Inspector General of the Homeland Security Department. Why do I say that? Because today we broke a story about Christopher Krebs. I don't know if you remember him, but Christopher Krebs was the guy that Donald Trump fired about a month ago. He was the head of the main cybersecurity infrastructure protection agency inside of the Homeland Security Department. It's called CISA, C-I-S-A. And he was fired shortly after he said this was the most secure, safe election in American history. Trump fired him. And then the media, they deified Christopher Krebs. He's a great guy. National security has been jeopardized by the firing. Then he went up to the Hill last week and Christopher Krebs testified. He got a pretty warm welcome. Democrats and Republicans alike didn't explore much of his performance or his track record inside of government. I think the big moment in that hearing came from Senator Ron Johnson, the chairman, who pinned Krebs down. When Krebs said this was the most safe and secure, he said, are you talking about voter fraud or ballot box stuffing, or are you just talking about foreign intrusions into the software? And he said, yeah, no, I'm just talking about foreign intrusions in the software. So he narrowed his proclamation to something that, you know, is probably technically true. To date, we haven't seen a foreign intrusion into their software, voting software, at least not yet. That's something to celebrate. I'm not taking that from Krebs. I got curious, and after all of the celebration of Christopher Krebs, after all the media's claims that this was going to be a major national security problem that Donald Trump fired the guy, I dug in and I tried to find out, how did Chris Krebs do? How did his agency, CISA, do? And what I found out, the Cybersecurity Information Security Agency, I found out that the Inspector General, the chief watchdog of the Homeland Security Department, not once, not twice, but a half dozen times in the last few months, just before Krebs was fired. In fact, three of these reports occurred in late September and October, just before the election, just before Christopher Krebs was fired by President Trump. They warned that the agency was underperforming. It had bad performance. It wasn't doing well. So let me give you a couple of them. And then in a few minutes, we're going to get to Senator Ron Johnson, the chairman of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, a guy who's led the Hunter Biden investigations, led the election integrity investigations, had Krebs on the witness chair, I think last Wednesday, not even a week ago. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin is going to join us and we're going to talk about all this. But let me tell you what the IG was reporting and disclosing and uncovering just weeks before Krebs was fired, just weeks before November 3rd elections. So in late September and in October, there were three reports that jumped out at me about CISA, the agency. They were agency specific. One of them said that CISA had some of the lowest scores in the Homeland Security Department for information security. Now, just think about that. The agency that's supposed to set the example, the policy, the intelligence to prevent cyber intrusions had some of the worst ratings inside of Homeland for its own information protection. In fact, out of six scores, it got a one. Four out of six scores, it had one. One was the lowest score. Five was the highest. Four is what the federal government requires agencies to be at. CISA didn't make four on any of its scores. It had four ones and two threes out of the six scores. Other agencies that have really important other responsibilities besides cybersecurity, Immigration Customs Enforcement, Customs and Border Patrol, our Border Patrol guys, their systems, their information security was better than the agency that's supposed to be the top dog on cybersecurity. That's one of them. Another one specifically talked about CISA's election security planning. And they gave the CISA the credit that they focused well on information software vulnerabilities in the voting softwares. They hardened that up. They got information. But on physical infrastructure protection of polling places, computer warehouses, voting locations, vote counting locations, it was dinged very hard for not building that into the plan, not sharing information, threat analysis, so that, well, you might save the software from being there, but what about the ballots? Could they have been tampered with? Could they have been stolen? Could they have been attacked? People voting attacked. Apparently, CISA did a bad job on that, according to a very strongly worded report that came out October 22nd, about 2 weeks before Election Day. What's interesting is that Krebs responded to the report in a letter to the IG saying, hey, I agree with your recommendations. We're going to fix this up. Good idea. Hey, but did you really have to release this before the election? Couldn't you kept this until later? Classic bureaucratic response. Don't ding us before when it can make a difference. Ding us afterwards when it doesn't make a difference anymore. That was one of the reports. I thought another report that was important, and its themeism actually carried through several of the reports going all the way back to June, when Homeland Security really raised serious concerns about CISA and Krebs' leadership and her performance, I should say, not leadership, but his performance, was the idea that the quality of information that CISA was sharing. So it set up all of these information sharing centers, very important stuff, right? If government knows something, you should get it down to the people who are affected by it, that its information sharing was low value, meaning it was passing things along, but it wasn't actionable intelligence. It wasn't stuff that might prevent someone from attacking us, might catch someone attacking us early on. It was kind of low value information being distributed through the CISA network. That is such an important finding, because in the intelligence world, your intelligence, your ability to protect is only as good as the quality of the intelligence that you're distributing. If you have bad intelligence, like Christopher Steele had on Russia, you deserve us. If you have weak or no visibility, no intelligence, you're not serving well. If you have low value intelligence, big bad things can happen and you have to react after the fact. You can't be on offense and protect yourself before it. And that was a theme that I saw in a lot of these reports. So why is that important? Well, CISA not only, and Christopher Krebs was not only responsible for protecting our election infrastructure, it's supposed to protect all of the civilian federal agencies' infrastructures. It's supposed to be the lead agency on that. Well, what did we learn right after Christopher Krebs was fired? You ready for this? That for 9 months, Russian hackers meddled, wandered, exploited through our most valuable government computer systems in the civilian area and stole secrets, infiltrated. And nobody in the U.S. government, including CISA, Chris Krebs, noticed. It took an outside FireEye to warn us of this. How could we spend billions of dollars on cyber infrastructure, pass all the laws that we did, create a special agency to take the lead on this, and we don't even capture what was the worst Pearl Harbor cyber attack? It took someone in the private sector. So when you hear all the adulation for Christopher Krebs and CISA, when you heard our national security was put at risk by his termination, go read these reports. Go to the website, justinnews.com. Go to my dig-in section of my story. Read what the Inspector General, the Chief Watchdog of Homeland Security, was saying. It's a far different story than what the media had been reporting for the last month. And now that we're in the midst of what may be the largest cyber hack in American history, certainly related to our government, you get the sense that maybe CISA, Chris Krebs, his colleagues, maybe well-intentioned, maybe they tried hard, but we weren't as safe as we thought we were. CISA might have been more of a sugar pill than actually a performance protection asset. And I'm not challenging the intentions of the people that went there because I believe they're good. I'm challenging the performance. And the only reason I'm challenging it is that my reporting, the reports of the Inspector General of the United States, well, they give us reason to question it. They warrant a much deeper explanation than the soft cursory deification of Christopher Krebs and CISA that happened 2 weeks ago. The journalism industry let us down on that. Hopefully we earned your trust by exposing what we knew and giving you the real data so you can make up your own mind. We're not trying to indoctrinate you. We're just trying to inform you. All right, we're going to go to commercial break. When we come back, Senator Ron Johnson, the great senator from Wisconsin, one of the states I lived at for a long time, where I met my beautiful wife. He's joining us to talk about Chris Krebs, CISA, the big cyber hack, election integrity, and I just bet you we'll get a question or two in on Hunter Biden too, because I know you care about that. But first, let's hear from our great sponsors and advertisers who make this show, make justthenews.com possible. We'll be right back after hearing from them. Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down. My blood sugar is down. My weight's down. My health is up. My sleeping patterns are better. My metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest, the chairman of the Senate Homeland and Governmental Affairs Committee, Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, joins us. Senator Johnson, welcome back to the show.
Well, John, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too. And congratulations on escaping Washington after the final vote. We finally got our work done for the year, huh?
Yeah, I'm back here in Wisconsin. I've got a smile on my face.
I bet you do. I have a lot of family in Wisconsin, and I smile as soon as I get on the ground myself. It's great. Listen, I want to talk to you a little bit. You've had some amazing hearings over the last few weeks, and you had this guy, Chris Krebs, who ran the Maine cybersecurity agency inside of Homeland. And, you know, he seemed to have a good resume. He had a good story to tell about the election and what he thought they did right and wrong. And then we've been going through some of these inspector general's reports at the Homeland Security Department, and it looks like his agency has had some problems. It wasn't really hitting the marks, and maybe the way he portrayed the efforts of the agency may have been a little more glowing than what the internal watchdog at Homeland thought. I'm just curious if you had some impressions of where we are in the fight on cyber war and whether CISA, his agency, was doing its job or whether it was struggling.
Again, not to correct you, but we always call it CISA.
CISA, but, there we go.
The Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency. Because I want to be as completely fair as possible. You know, one thing I will say about IG reports, and I've read a lot of them, I've never seen one that was glowing in its praise for the agency. I mean, it's just not
That's
their
true.
Job. I mean,
they're
there to uncover and point out problems. But, you know, all that being said, with, you know, the blanket statements that the former director Krebs talked about election security, which I do believe were completely misinterpreted.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because he the sweeping statement, this is the most secure election, you know, in our history. I think that may be a paraphrase, but I think it's pretty accurate.
That's right.
You know, that left the impression, it might have been meant to leave the impression, that this election was perfect. Okay. But when he's saying the most secure, he's really talking about, you know, foreign interference as relates to cyber hacks and, you know, the attack on the internet system here, that's involved with the elections. He admitted in testimony before our committee, he wasn't speaking of fraud. And our hearing was, you know, examining the irregularities of the 2020 elections. We were primarily talking about the aspects of fraud.
Right.
And the lack of transparency and the inability of observers to really observe and the fact that courts, you know, didn't necessarily look at evidence. They just dismissed a lot of these cases based on lack of standing or, you know, the cloak of latches, which, you know, you're bringing this controversy too late in the process. So, you know, I think the mistake that Director Krebs made in that sweeping statement, It simply was misleading. It was too sweeping. And people, from my standpoint, completely misinterpreted it. And of course, the liberal media latched onto it.
Of course.
So we really didn't have an accurate portrayal of the issues that have frustrated supporters of President Trump, the 74 million people that voted for him, their questions have not been answered as it comes to these irregularities.
Yeah, that's such an important point. And I think that you're right that so many of us missed the very important caveat, which was he was talking about cyber intrusions from a foreign power, not about irregularities or fraud that could have occurred in the old-fashioned way of just, you know, even ballot stuffing, right? Just the ballot box stuffing, obvious things like that. So that distinction got lost, and I'm glad that you picked up on it and have really educated us on why that's different. When you look at what we learned in the last week, the breadth of what, you know, some people are calling it the Pearl Harbor of cyber attacks, this massive attack that's being attributed to Russian hackers across multiple agencies. It looks like it went on for about 9 months undetected. It took someone in the private sector, FireEye, which, you know, is a very good firm, to first bring it to the attention. What does it say about Homeland, CISA, Krebs, and others that we were left naked for basically about 9 months?
Well, first of all, it says what I've always believed is if you're really looking for cybersecurity, we have to look to the private sector because the private sector is always going to outperform government.
I mean, great point.
That's just my belief, but I'm a private sector guy. Again, you know, Director Krebs, when it came to elections, the fact that the CISA really did move us from 82% paper ballot backup to 95%. I mean, that was an accomplishment.
But, sure.
You know, if I were former Director Krebs, I would kind of meld into the background right now based on those IG reports and based on, you know, this massive and incredibly serious hack by SolarWinds. I mean, it does not speak well to what CISA was doing, what government agencies are doing, you know, the whole Einstein, you know, cybersecurity program.
Right.
Which, you know, we've tried to support by our committee. You know, the whole problem, John, in dealing with cybersecurity is the vast majority of Americans, including myself, are not computer scientists.
Yep.
This is incredibly complex.
It is.
It's not easy. The federal government has a really difficult time attracting, hiring, and retaining the best talent. They just can't pay for it. It's just an inherent problem with government's ability to have the personnel they need in comparison to the personnel that the private sector can retain because it can pay them a whole lot more. And so it's just a mismatch between what capabilities ever can be. Now, we've got patriots. Again, we've got good people and smart people that are here trying to defend, you know, our government cyber assets, as well as helping the private sector do it as well. And there are a lot of things that we do well. You know, these ISACs, you know, the information sharing and analysis centers. And, you know, these are positive things, but the people on offense, the hackers, the cyber attackers, they have the advantage. You know, just like the Maginot Line, you know, you're setting up a defense always based on the last war and people figure out a way around it. And so, I can't be real critical of our government's defensive efforts because it's an almost impossible and thankless task. But I think you have to take a look at that seriously. And again, continue to come to the conclusion I always come to is you can't look to the federal government at solving our cybersecurity problems. We really need to partner with closely with the private sector. And as you pointed out, it was FireEye, which really is kind of one of the
oh yeah, they're really impressive, aren't they?
Notable, but they were hacked too. That shows you how difficult a job and how monumental our task really is when it comes to cyber defense.
Yeah, no, that really does highlight the challenge at hand. There were a couple things that jumped out at me in the IG report. One is, you know, if you're going to lead by example, you should have your own good information security systems. And CISA had the lowest score on 4 of the 6 ratings and underperformed other agencies inside Homeland Security, like the Customs and Border Patrol and Immigration Customs Enforcement. When you're looking at that and you do oversight, and, you know, a lot of people think, like oversight hearings are political, right? They're supposed to be for gotcha moments, but they're not actually. They're designed to press the government to get better. When you see that the lead agency that's supposed to be getting everybody else hardened and their defenses ready against this incredible challenge has weak information security for itself, what message does that send downstream to the others that are following CISA's instructions or its example?
Well, again, as it relates to a former Director Krebs, if I were him, I'd keep a low profile.
yeah.
But you know, it really does say that the Secretary of Homeland Security, and you know, we'll have an outgoing one here, it looks like.
Right.
The new Secretary of Department of Homeland Security is going to have to really take a look at CISA. You know, part of that IG report talked about, you know, lack of human resources, and that's what I was speaking to. And it's not necessarily the government's fault. The government has a real difficult time. You know, Senator Peters and I have recognized that. We've been trying to come up with imaginative ways of having programs where you maybe pay off student loan debt to attract people if they stay in government for, you know, longer than 18 months or 2 years or 3 years. You know, things like sabbaticals, you know, allow the private sector potentially even donate managerial time and personnel time to come in the government. It would be mutually beneficial for those private sector companies as well as those individuals as well as government. We've got to think outside the box because, I mean, you know, Silicon Valley, I mean, these companies are behemoths. They're multi-billion. They're rolling in the cash so they can pay people multi-million dollar salaries. You know, government salary tops off at, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars, which is a lot of money. But in the marketplace of ideas and in the marketplace, they're trying to attract the top talent. And again, this top talent is rare. I mean, these people that know, you know, how to the computer science of all this, you know, artificial intelligence. I mean, I am not even close to be able to understand all that. Those are the type of people that government needs as well.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, in the marketplace today, the top creme de la creme talent are going to get picked off for a lot more than the 200,000. And so it is interesting. These ideas like a sabbatical program or a student loan compensation program could really attract talent and get us more people that are brighter and better quicker. That sounds like a really great idea. The other element that felt like an oversight issue when you look at it is they kept talking about the quality of the information that CISA could get in the hands of people on the front lines wasn't very strong. That, you know, they had created these great fusion centers that can send information out, but the actionable intelligence that could really prevent an attack or stop an attack early wasn't flowing. And it seems like we're learning that about the Russia hack, the cyber hack that we're learning about now, that information moved really slowly when there were warning signs. Is there something that your committee, Congress, the Homeland Security Department should do to up the game, to get better intelligence? We got really good at stopping terrorism, right? We after 9/11, is there something that we can do to get on more of an offensive posture on sharing information about cyber threats?
So this is going to be a slightly longer-winded answer. I know I've already been long-winded.
No, this is great.
When I first came to Congress, again, I'm an accountant myself, you know, so I understand computers from a standpoint how you use them.
Right.
But we immediately recognized, and everybody recognized, that cybersecurity was a huge priority for the private sector as well as government. And so I'd always ask in these hearings, you know, what are the top priorities? What are the first two things we have to do? And the answer always was information sharing and then data breach notification. It's some kind of nationalized preemptive type of standard. And okay, not a problem. Let's do it. Well, it's a whole lot more difficult than that. We've actually made some progress in information sharing. Data breach is almost impossible. I mean, think about it. You know, what I've learned is somebody that's hacked into a system, I think on average, this might be a couple of year old data, but on average, they've been inside your computer system for a couple hundred days before you even notice it.
Wow.
So then when you notice it, you know, all of a sudden government's saying, we got to notify us in 24 hours. You don't even know what you're dealing with. And that's what's happening right now with the SolarWinds hack. It'll probably take months to fully understand this. So, you know, what are you supposed to share? You know, what are you supposed to notify people of? So this is an incredibly complex and difficult issue. Information sharing, and even worse, is, you know, the requirements that we place, of course, subject to, you know, lawsuits, that type of thing. When a company or a private entity gets hacked, you know, even a government agency, you know, their requirement to notify Congress. You know, what's the point of notification? What really is, you know, understanding that you got tacked? I mean, what does that look like? What's the definition of all that? So this is incredibly complex. There's been all kinds of efforts in terms of improving information sharing. That's what those IFACs are all about. So we've stood up these organizations. There are really good people inside of government, outside of government, trying to grapple with this incredibly difficult issue. So again, that's why I'm not sitting here just coming down and just being incredibly critical. I mean, it's easy to carp about things.
Yeah.
It's easy to, from the outside, to criticize. You know, this is my definition of a problem. Now, there are all kinds of problems in Washington, D.C. that I think have easy solutions. You know, people maybe don't see it that way. My definition of a problem is something that does not have an easy solution, maybe doesn't even have a solution. But, you know, there are things that a lot of well-intentioned people are doing, and I just don't beat up on people that haven't gotten it perfect. You're never going to get this perfect. This is really a tough nut to crack.
It is, and it's going to be with us for a long time. We're in such an interconnected world now that one vulnerability, as we learned in this one, a singular vulnerability may even have been interns is one of the things we were hearing. Singular vulnerability had 18,000-20,000 victims within a few months, and I think that interconnectivity is something that's going to be the great challenge of the future for us, because we don't want to give up all the advances. But obviously, it's a big challenge. One last question, because I know you're on the road traveling, but I wanted to ask you about Hunter Biden and how far in 2020. We started this year with an impeachment proceeding, a trial on which the premise was the president of the United States had no reason to ask any questions about Hunter Biden because there was nothing wrong there. That was the storyline. And we ended with the word that Hunter Biden is under criminal investigation, apparently for tax evasion, by his own acknowledgement of the contacts he's had with prosecutors. You did so much to bring to attention the SARS, the reports that came out that showed the suspicious transactions. Where do you think this heads in 2021, and what will you be doing to further the oversight on it?
Well, first of all, you did, you know, just, you know, I would almost say the lion's share in a lot of this investigation. You know, a couple other journalists that have integrity that actually are practicing investigative journalism.
Yeah.
But you are, from my standpoint, the premier one.
Thank you, sir.
This case, but on many, many others as well. But that's why we need a free press.
Yeah, good point.
What I found from a standpoint of congressional oversight, we're the last to find out. Now, we do have capabilities of issuing subpoenas, issuing oversight letters that government agencies are supposed to respond to. They do reluctantly. We get some information. But the people pressing the envelope really is an inquisitive press. You know, people like you. You know, first of all, you have sources that are willing to come to you because they know that their confidentiality is going to be maintained. That's not always the case within Congress. You know, exactly. Yeah. Sometimes people's identities get blown.
That's right.
So people are reluctant to come forward. So I've learned a lot about this investigation, and of course the unit that has the strongest and greatest investigatory power is the Department of Justice. But truthfully, if you're being investigated and you're completely innocent, you want to make sure that always remains confidential so that you're not tainted if there's not an indictment. So there's just a natural tension there in terms of getting the information from an investigation out of the Justice Department and making that public. But there's a difference between normal type of investigations, criminal behavior, and investigations of political wrongdoing in the political realm. And that's where you see the tension. So again, what you really need, we need an investigatory press to put pressure on the process and to dig. And so I just give, you know, really, my hat's off to you and your colleagues that really do take their role in our society and our democracy seriously, in an unbiased way, asking the questions, trying to get the information the American public does need to have. You know, my investigation into Hunter Biden, the Bidens were never targeted. They put a target on their back through their conflict of interest. But it was important the public knows what happened because of the counterintelligence, the extortion threat that whatever China knows, whatever Russia knows, whatever Ukraine knows, whatever Kazakhstan knows, I mean, whatever Romania knows about these foreign entanglements of the Biden family can be used to affect policy and could affect our national security. That's why this was important. This was not a political hit job, as right. you know, Stephen Colbert implies. No, this was a serious investigation on all our part, because our national security is put at risk when you have these kind of financial foreign entanglements that the Bidens obviously have. Again, as I've said, this is a big mess. This story is not going away. And in a Biden presidency, this is going to be an even bigger mess, and should be a bigger story because it's important.
Yeah.
Now, let me leave it on this one too. We should actually be thanked by people from a standpoint of the fact that we have lessened the national security risk because we've made this available. At least these issues, you know, these connections,
those payments can't
be used as blackmail. So, you know, we've taken some of that extortion and counterintelligence threat away. I don't know what else is lurking out there, though.
That's a great point. And that is some point. And you're right. We've better illuminated something now that a foreign power can't use to hijack the Biden family or other players in this. And that is a win as we close out a very difficult 2020 year. Well, Senator, I want to thank you very much. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a blessed start to the new year. And I want to thank you for all the times you've joined us on this show and been quoted in our news articles. You help us understand the role of oversight so much better. We're so lucky to have you.
Well, John, you know, Merry Christmas to you and your listeners as well. And by the way, don't be expecting a whole lot of thanks from the mainstream media for all your good efforts.
Yes, no, that card's not coming in the mail. Well, thanks again, sir, and thank you for all you do. All right, folks, we'll be back in just a second to wrap things up. Hey, folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you got to do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-GOLD Gold. That's 800-200-GOLD. And find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653 or gold, or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon Just the News family. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't, you'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you, because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000, or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. Yes, we're just a few days from Christmas. Yes, we've had a topsy-turvy year. We're only about 10 days away from putting 2020 in the rearview mirror. I know a lot of people will be glad about that. Well, I hope you enjoyed Senator Ron Johnson. We not only look backwards as to what we can learn about Sisa and Chris Krebs and his performance and our cybersecurity vulnerabilities. We talked about what we should be looking at in the future next year to harden our defenses, to learn from our mistakes, to learn from our underperformance on cybersecurity. I thought that was a valuable election discussion, and not only about elections, but about total cybersecurity across all sectors of American governance and civilian society. And I think we got a little bit of insight from Ron Johnson as it related to, as it relates to Hunter Biden. I thought the most provocative thing he said, it's still ringing in my ears a few minutes later, is we already have made America safer by exposing some of the questionable conduct, business transactions that could have been used to blackmail or harm the Biden family, extort the Biden family, by exposing them through Senate oversight, through journalism, investigative reporting. We've already made America safer. I haven't heard someone say that before, but boy, did it ring in my ears when Ron Johnson said it just a few minutes ago. Hope you enjoyed that. I hope you're getting ready for Christmas. You're baking some cookies, wrapping some presents, getting some wood for the fireplace on Christmas Eve. But take some time to enjoy this holiday season. It's not the same holiday season as always, but it can be what you make it, with your family, with the love of your friends, with phones and phone calls and Skype and meeting software. You should be able to reach out and tell your family and friends you love them, you miss them, and celebrate Christmas, the new year. Maybe not the same way we always do it. Maybe a little more socially distanced, maybe a mask on here or there, an electronic communication. But we can still make Christmas important this year, and I hope you do. Hope you make it valuable and meaningful to all you love and cherish. I know my family will be doing that. We thank you for your listening. We'll be back tomorrow, Wednesday, December 23rd, with a new edition of John Solomon Reports. I think we're going to have Peter Navarro. Yes, the White House official who wrote the big report called The Immaculate Deception. Yes, about election integrity issues worldwide. Probably one of the best compilations of what we know and don't know about the 2020 election. We're going to have Peter on, we hear, tomorrow. So tune back tomorrow. Check us out. Hopefully we'll break some more news, have some new information for you. Until then, God bless you. God bless America. Have a safe evening and enjoy your family, your friends, the fellowship of all those in your inner circle as we enter this beautiful holiday season. I'm John Solomon, and you've been listening to John Solomon Reports. Angie's List is now Angie, A-N-G-I, the nation's largest home services marketplace, and they're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project is, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. That's what you want, right? I'm thinking about building out my basement in my cabin. I've been perusing Angie, looking for just the right contractor to get it done the way my wife and I want it done. Now, Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and right in your neighborhood. That's important, right? You can do comparative shopping. Get started today at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today. The app and the website are free to use. Angie.com or the Angie app. Go check it out today. Hey folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you got to do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-GOLD Gold. That's 800-200-GOLD. And find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653, gold, or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon Just the News family.